let it be an invocation calling forth that presence that is ultimately within one's very heart and soul. It's really the fabric of our very being. So it's as if you're invoking that presence from within and enlivening all of the elementals to join in this unitive who, the earth element. And the water element all around us and even in the air here in Missouri. Fire element, the heat within our body and the sun. And the air elementals, our very breath. Culminates and also dissipates all other elements. Expelled all the air, take a deep breath. Feel that fullness and aliveness of the breath of the divine, that divine who. Thank you. the great astrophysicists of our day are telling us in scientific ways what the mystics of old always knew. We are connected to each other biologically. We are connected to this earth chemically, and we're connected to the whole universe atomically. If that's true, what we do has a resonant effect everywhere in the universe, throughout all of time and all of space. So making these sacred sounds together creates this resonant vibration and alignment. We offer these prayers for the benefit of all beings. I was very fortunate as a child, maybe some wouldn't think so, but I went to Catholic school, and I had some rather illuminated people teaching me. I remember having a nun say to me, "Never forget that the same particles that were breathed by Jesus, you are breathing in. And the great music of Mozart and Beethoven still exist. You just need to tune to it." So we're tuning here. And this sacred sound is the embodiment, like Om, of these sacred sounds. So at the beginning, like in the end, let us dedicate everything that arises here in this class time and in all the class times together from beginningless time for the benefit of all beings. And I also think it's important at the beginning of camp to think about what one's intention is. Setting the intention for this camp. Make a wish, make a prayer for yourself, for those near and dear to you, for those that offend you and you consider perhaps your enemy. Make a prayer, make a wish. Here we're talking about Sufism, but I will say that my teachers in Buddhism have said, never forget, your best friend can become your worst enemy, and your worst enemy can become your best friend. And what was high one day can become low. What was full can become empty, and the opposite is all true. There are cycles within cycles. Where are you within your cycle? Offer it all up. So let us rise, we'll face the east, and we'll say the Sufi invocation together. And in the tradition of the Sufi movement, we make this gesture. It's the gesture that we make in many traditions, but it's this, fill me, I am empty, fill me. And by the way, at the Darga of Hazrat Naik Khan, where his body is laid to rest, the spirit, of course, is infinite and everywhere. The first word is towards. You feel the difference between toward and towards. So here we say towards the one.
Towards the one. The perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance.
And feel this infinite presence that is all around us, but feel it filling your palms with beautiful blessings. And if you visualize, you may see it as golden, radiant light. And take this cup and pour it as a bestowal of blessings over and through your being. Please be seated. know John.
No bad.
One hand puppy. One handed basket we do. So the format of the class, and I hope you'll agree in it, well, it won't matter much if you don't, because I have a plan, is that we read a little, and then we do some practice that we'll emphasize, or we may highlight it with other readings. Is that all right with you? And the teachings are really focused on the teachings of Hazrat Inayat Khan, and as I said last night, it's on mystic relaxation, which for me is such an amazing teaching, and I think in our lives that get more and more accelerated, we need to learn this art so that we can be functional, healthy, happy, you know, prosperous in all the ways that we need to be effective. And in the Kenny Rogers tradition, knowing when to hold it and knowing when to fold it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I'm very touched by these teachings. It's something that's very vital and alive in my life, and I need to study it more. So here we are all together, and I hope you'll enjoy this journey. So this is on the subject of mystic relaxation, on mental purification and healing. Mystic relaxation is of the greatest importance. Mystic relaxation is of the greatest importance. For the whole spiritual culture is based and built upon this one subject. Imagine that. Yet there is so little spoken and written about it. It has been experienced and studied by the seekers after truth of all ages. And it is by the full understanding of this subject that they attain to greater power and inspiration. Life is rhythm. Life is rhythm. This rhythm may be divided into three stages. At every stage, this rhythm changes the nature and character of life and of us. One rhythm is mobile. Another is active. And the third is chaotic. The mobile rhythm is creative, productive, constructive, and through that rhythm, all power and inspiration are gained, and peace is experienced. It's interesting, isn't it? Because when we think of power, perhaps, often that word can be interpreted in so many different ways. But Murshid Sam, I understand, I didn't hear him, but I've been told that he would say, power is peace and peace is power. Can I ask someone, what does that mean to you? What does that mean when he said to us, peace is power? Anyone? What does that mean? to you. Maybe there's not a right or wrong answer.
This is if I am at peace, I have full access to my own personal channels of power.
Okay. If I am at peace, I have access to my personal channel of power. Anyone else?
Could be no loss in power without peace, that there's wasted power, maybe in chaos or in conflict, when there isn't a diffusion of power, diffusion of energy in those fields, there's greater base from which to blossom.
Okay, greater foundation. Richard?
For there truly to be peace, it needs to be universal. So peace requires universal cooperation. That's a huge power.
It is a huge power. Inshallah, one day we'll accomplish that. Anyone else? Vimedika?
This is more from a personal note, but from personal experience, one of the things that I notice is when I feel at peace, there's a sense of a balance almost at the very core of my being, that things just feel very balanced and even in a way. And there's a sense of peace in that. And I find that if I'm in that place and I can actually feel that place and I'm being in the world from that place, that things come forth from me in a very different manner. And there is a sense of feeling power in that, and it's not power the way I've understood power to mean from our culture. And I'm not even sure I have the particular words that would describe that difference right now, but it's a feeling difference that I notice.
What's coming to mind is to share a little story with you that might illuminate it too. At one point, some of you know Karuna Maima from the Sri Aurobindo Ashram in New Delhi. Some of you've met her. She's a great being. You know, she was someone that was a very scholarly person. She was a vice chancellor at one of the great universities in Agra, India. And she's also a great music master, very well recognized in India and now worldwide. And it happened that it was my good fortune. At one point, I was traveling with her in India, and there was a small group of us together. And there was a chaotic moment. The rhythm of chaos is talked about here in this paper, and it'll be elaborated more on. In an airport, which can sometimes happen in India if you've been there. It can happen anywhere, believe me. But it was going to be difficult for us to get on the plane that we had reserved. And we, of course, really wanted to get on that plane because we had to go elsewhere. And there was an element of chaos and excitement that started to arise. And she very calmly said, "If we have unity, we have power. Stay calm and keep concentrated. We'll get on that plane." And sure enough, we did. But it was, you know, it's that kind of thing where you join together, things become the unity. I mean, we're here speaking about unity, yes? The unity of religious ideals, the unity of people, the universal brotherhood and sisterhood, and that there's a great power in that. And I think it's true that the inner power is reflected in that too, because we, in some ways, we can release this idea that we are the doer. You know, we're part of a collaboration, and that's a great freedom, isn't it? Yeah. Life is rhythm. I'm going back for a moment. This rhythm may be divided into three stages. And at every moment, this rhythm changes the character, the nature and character of life. One is mobile. another active, and the third chaotic. The mobile character is creative, productive, constructive, and through that rhythm, all power and inspiration are gained, and peace is experienced. The further stage to that rhythm, the active rhythm, is the source of success and accomplishment, of progress and advancement, the source of joy and fulfillment. And the third stage of this rhythm, the chaotic rhythm, is the source of failure, of death, of disease, and destruction, the source of all pain and sorrow. In these few paragraphs, I mean, Murshid is giving us a prescription here. If you want to change your life, change your rhythm. If you want to change your life, change your rhythm. Can you understand that? I mean, does that feel like it resonates? But how does one change one's rhythm is the question. One of the great, again, I use other traditions to highlight this, but in the Lojong teachings, the training of the mind in Tibetan Buddhism, one of the things that they say is, when you're stuck, do something different. You know? And there are those great stories about walking down the street and there's the hole and you keep falling in it, right? And then it's eventually you walk around the hole and then eventually you totally get it and you just walk down a different street, right? So, you know, it's like that's kind of the premise, that just do something different. I like to tell this little story because, you know, we all slip into these moods. Either we, myself included, either we feel sorry for ourselves or we get angry or we get frustrated or we're tired or whatever, you know. And we just think that's where we're going to live forever, right? One of my favorite things to do is to go to this, it's a garden place near my home where they have beautiful fountains and statues. And I go there and look at something beautiful. And it changes the way I feel. Murshid Vira years ago, I think it was here at this camp, but she had said as a prescription to parents that maybe were coping with a child that somehow had been disturbed because of maybe some abuse or something, we ourselves also included, that was her prescription. Give them something beautiful every day to concentrate on. Give them something beautiful every day to concentrate on. And this relates very much to these teachings because in other places, Murshid talks about the impressions upon our minds. And so in a way, Zikr does it. Actually, all of these dances, I think, do it. Any prayer does it. It clarifies the heart. You know, it helps us, the heart, become clear, undisturbed, so that the reflection or the radiance of the soul can really emerge. And so by giving a favorable impression, it can change that. It can help clarify that for ourselves, for our children, inshallah, for God willing, for the whole world. Murshid puts a great deal of effort and emphasis on this idea of rhythm. He says that literally by changing our rhythm and our breath, we can totally change the atmosphere and be of benefit to others. And I like in the Gathas where he talks about, it's not the fault, he likens it to music, that on the keyboard, sometimes two keys next to each other don't sound harmonious. And he said, this is how people are. And he said, when you look at the piano, you don't say, oh, that's a bad note, that's a good note, right? It's just, they don't harmonize. And he said, the work of the Sufi is to find a way to be the keynote, to strike the keynote, the note that tunes all the other notes. How beautiful is that? Is it perfect? It is. And it really, in some ways, we can become very loving and kind and develop an understanding, because then we realize perhaps we're out of vibration or tune, or perhaps something in the atmosphere is out of vibration or tune. You know, another person, then we don't have to react, right? It's really beautiful when we study deeply what Murshid's telling us. People are sleepy. I feel sad I should have made it this time of day. Some of you are sleepy, some of you are not. Some people need rest. Joe. I always kid my husband. He's kind of an average Joe. He wouldn't mind me saying that. He likes it, too. He likes sort of being a hidden one. But he's like a Superman to me, you know? And I always say, you really don't do what you do. You're not an engineer. You're a secret agent, aren't you? So when I hear these things, he'll tease me sometimes when we talk. He's like, did the big black helicopters come by while you were teaching? It's like, did you send them? And there they were. So Murshid elaborates further. He says, the first kind of rhythm is slow. The second kind of rhythm is faster. And the third is faster still. The first kind of rhythm is slow. So the rhythm that is creative, productive, constructive, and that has all power and inspiration, and where peace is attained, is a slower rhythm of breath. And then the second one is faster. And again, he talks about that rhythm as being active, where we find a source of success and accomplishment, progress, advancement, joy, and fulfillment. And the third is a zigzag. Don't be thinking about it so much. We'll do a practice that will highlight this for you. But again, I read, the first rhythm is slow, the second is faster, the third is faster still. The direction of the first is direct. I might just highlight it in this way. Those of you that have studied the Sufi method of healing, this is essential. Because when you're breathing, ya shafi, ya kafi, you are directing that healing energy on the vibration of the name that has been read in the circle. One has to understand the directions of the breath. You understand what I'm saying here, those that have done the healing circle, perhaps. Where's Kalisa? She knows what I'm talking about, yeah? You have to be able to direct your thoughts and your breath. The second breath is even. So if you want to have a greater sphere of influence, you're going to expand the breath in an even way. Okay? And then this destructive breath, or the chaotic breath, is zigzag. Okay? Is there any time where you think you might want to use that zigzag breath? Yes.
There was a wonderful exercise that I do with my students. We take the first 5 minutes and we walk around any locomotor activity,
Okay.
And then the second 5 minutes, any movement you want, and it has to be a locomotive.
It has to be a
locomotive, you know, moving, crawling, skipping, not jumping. And you have to vocalize. And you can make up words, you can sing, you can whatever. And then the third one is you jump up and down, or you imagine jumping up and down as much as you can with the word poo, your hands above your ears. And then we go into a very, very slow, slow meditative dissolve. And it's very powerful to go purposely from the chaotic and directly and slow.
Yes, it's very good. And we're gonna do some breath work like that. Maybe one day you'll work with us in that practice. It sounds beautiful. Thank you. Again, is there any time we want to invoke the chaotic breath or the destructive breath?
If you want to shake things up.
If you want to shake things up. Well, okay. Think about it. Go deeply within. Just take a moment and ask your inner self, when could that zigzag breath be of benefit? The chaotic or the destructive breath?
Protection.
Say it again.
Protection.
You want to elaborate?
There's energy or force coming at you or around you that you feel is negative.
Okay.
If
there's an energy or force that's coming at you that feels negative, maybe you want to put up a wall. Okay, anything else?
What about as a possibility, as a like a detoxification? You know, we suppress things, we stuff them down, and in order to release it, to get it out, you know, it might kind of help stir something up.
Yeah. I think that it can be very useful for us. I mean, if there's something, if we're either stuck in a pattern that we'd like to release, or there's something, some situation that needs to be dissolved so movement can happen, these breaths could be used or invoked to help to create movement where there's stagnation. You understand? So I'm saying that to highlight the fact that we don't have to be afraid of those breaths or say, oh, that's a bad breath if I'm feeling that way. Not that breath could ever be bad, my God. But you understand what I'm saying. There's a purpose in Murshid telling us all these things, Murshid Hazra and Nikon, so that we can understand becoming masters of the breath. I mean, that culture is so very important to observe within ourselves. It really helps us to become sensitive. For example, if someone else is in a zigzag breath and they can't calm themselves, what's the first thing you do to someone that's in shock? What do you tell them to do? Take a deep breath and what else? Okay, keep warm. And maybe I'm the only one that doesn't do that. I mean, don't you tell them to lie down and feel comfortable, you know, to feel that contact with the earth, that spreading motion, you know? So if you can, I would like to do, just as a breathing practice, what Mariangela Savitri was talking about. If you can imagine, we're first going to start with that zigzag breath. So your breath is going to be shorter and maybe a little erratic. Imagine the zigzag motion. I mean, in a way, this is the motion where the serpent moves, too. It's not a bad thing. But use that to kind of break up congestion, maybe, in your body, okay, or obstacles that are there. And we'll just do it for a short time, so it will be a shorter breath, and you'll kind of imagine it moving in a zigzag up and down. So and you can let your abdomen go in and out. You know, the yogis do that with the fire breath too, with the tongue out. And just relax. Feel your body. Can share, what did you feel after that? Or during it? Cabrilla?
Oh, it was so interesting how that breath, it was interesting how that breath pattern is what happens when we're sobbing. Like for me, that's what came up, like an extreme, you know, emotion where it's just all coming out and that naturally would happen.
Right.
And how that is something that would help to bring about maybe a healing of the heart if it's something of that nature that's making me or whoever cry in that way. But that's what it felt like.
Oh, that's
like
very really interesting. Deepened. Yes. Yeah. I can feel it too in you. That motion is what happens when people are sobbing, or you know, when you sob or cry very deeply, you know, and that invoked that feeling, and where it could be seen that sometimes the crying or sobbing like that can be very healing and releasing, and that breath invoked that.
After a good cry, when I need a good cry, and when you're done with a good cry, oh, you feel so much better. And at the end of that exercise, I smiled. I felt this upswelling of joy.
Okay.
And I wonder if there's a connection mm-hmm. between them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I connected with laughter.
Good. Mm-hmm. See? Interesting,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
I thought of during childbirth, natural childbirth, when you want to transition, when the contractions are getting really, really hard, you do that. Breathing is a way to kind of stay on top of the contractions.
Mm-hmm. So it's like during childbirth when the contractions are getting closer and closer together, that that breath to kind of help stay on top of that and move that energy. Yes, Raheem.
In the heat of the afternoon, I'm getting tired, but after having like that,
me too. I could feel the inner tingling all over too. It really got the energy moving. So you see, it can also be good to enliven you. I mean, that was also one of the things. Karuna Mai, she must be with us. I think she's on her way in July to the States, so she's here with us. Sometimes Murshida Vera comes, and today it's Karuna Mai. But she had given me a practice one time. She was quite ill. And she was at the ashram, and a Shridi Sai Baba, a devotee of his, came to the ashram just very mysteriously one day. And everyone might want to stand up and do this with me because it will help awaken you. By the way, Karuna Mai is such a devotee of Hazaranai Khan. She reads Murshid's teachings, and during the urge, she always goes and makes an offering of ragas during the Urs celebration. But the practice is breathing like this, but you move your hands, and I'll just show you. So you're going up and down on your toes like this, and you go.
Lord.
feels good, doesn't it? Okay. Feels good though, doesn't it? Can lift the energy too. How did that feel?
Invigorating.
Good, good. So you can see here that the breath is the key. You know, the breath is the key. When I see myself going a certain direction with thoughts or feelings or even physically, it's the breath. It's the breath. And sometimes being in touch, you know, at the beginning we invoked the elements. What is that?
It's the water.
Oh. You're on oxygen? Speaking of the breath, here, let me just get a little. You could have all kinds of things in there. Yeah, it's good to drink a lot. The elements, they exist in our body, of course, and anyone that studies the more Eastern traditions of medicine understand it's a matter of balancing those elements to bring wholesomeness into our bodies, our minds, our mentalities, and so forth. And so being in touch with the elements is so important, and to understand the elements and their work within our body. And when we're feeling a little out of sync, so to speak, it's likely that the elements are not in sync. And so it's very, very important to look at the rhythm of those elements. It wasn't something I was planning on doing, but here we are again with the elemental breaths. Is looking at how those elements are at play in our world, in our lives, in our beings. And I'm not going to do the full, there's very elaborate visualizations that come with the elements, but I think just now maybe. Well, no, I'm going back to the teaching. Then we'll get to that. Let me just get back here to highlight this teaching more. So let's go back for a moment to, we've done the zigzag, and we can see that it can break up, it can be destructive to our tiredness, let's say, okay? Or to our lethargy. We may need it. Now, I wouldn't recommend that breath all the time because it could really create quite an imbalance, you can imagine. It would be, for long periods of time, it would be exhausting. You know, you don't want to be in that element or that breath for too long. That irregular rhythm can be not helpful. But for short periods of time, it could be very helpful. You seem people seem a little more awake and alert, and do you feel that way? So the second breath is an even breath, and if you can imagine your breath this morning, Halima talked about that, the breath spreading and connecting to those around us. So, but the breath is an even breath. So the rhythm would be quite even and spreading. If you want to have a greater influence, if you're a teacher, for example, or directing a lecture, you know, you really want your breath to be even and have a spreading influence so that it can have a greater capacity to touch people. So think of it like that, or like the vastness of the sky, just this even, expansive breath. And let the rhythm of your breath become very even. And if you can imagine, it is as if your whole body is breathing in 365 degrees in multiple dimensions. That it's not singular and it's not just in and out the nostrils. Everything is breathing in a very even, expansive way. Now just check in with your body. Feel what you're feeling. Notice any thoughts that may arise. Notice the sensations within your body. You know, this is from the Anapanasa Sutra, the first teaching Lord Buddha gave to his disciples was to look at these different dimensions, just knowing that you're breathing. And then to look at more subtle levels of thoughts, feelings, body sensations, objects of thinking. This is a part of that tradition. Mershon was very aware of the Buddhist tradition. You see it in subtle ways in his teaching. And these breath practices, these studies of rhythm are also very key. Of course, they go way back to Lord Shiva and have come through the various sutras, the teachings of Patanjali, Raja Yoga, the study and science of breath. And if anyone would like to share what happened, because it's different than the previous breath, are there some comments? It's important to feel, but it's also important to sometimes articulate. It brings things into a formation in our being. Clear. Yes?
I just one word, equalizing.
Equalizing. Equalizing. Yes.
Did that breath was more expansive, whereas the zigzag breath was maybe for contraction.
Okay, very good. I think so too, yes. And expansive, yeah, and equalizing, yeah. So we can see where we can use this when we're needing to get a greater scope or a greater view. And a lot of times when we feel contracted, it's usually the breath, if we study it, it is contracted or erratic. And so if we need a greater vision, a greater sense of relaxation or equilibrium, an expansiveness, we can go to this breath. It's relaxing, but it's also very alive, isn't it? I mean, did it feel that way to you all?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I mean, you're awake and you're not didn't get sleepy with it. Raheem?
As I was sitting and my eyes were closed, I just saw this immense cleanness, and then afterwards I'm not doing elemental breathing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Beautiful.
I felt warm.
Warm. Okay.
Not hot outside like today, but in inner, everything was warm. It was nice.
Radiant, maybe. Is
maybe
the radiant. Radiance to it. Yes. I think that's
the radiant heat. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sophia, with what you were saying, I felt real relaxed, but also very alert.
Yes. And that's the object here. I mean, that's really what mystic relaxation is. When you can feel very subtly the vibrations that are around you without being disturbed by them, when you can keep your equilibrium in the middle of things, you know, it's not like I have to do something or I don't have to do something. You know, it's just there's an isness to that. I love the word wholesome. You know, His Holiness the Dalai Lama uses, I mean, you see that word emerge a lot in Buddhism. Wholesome. You know, what does that mean to be wholesome?